So, where's the time? Okay, so 20 past
22.
23.
Okay. So, maybe we could. Do you guys like questions and answers? Would you like to do that? Or do you want. Or let me ask it this way. Does anybody have a question? Karen has one.
Why is the orange color chosen?
Ah.
So let's just do this. We'll just do some questions and answers. We have until about maybe 1 or 1:15.
1, huh?
I like that. That's what I like, sir.
Well, different colors, they carry different qualities. It is said like yellowish, orangey, is carrying the color of, or the quality of goodness. Red is carrying passion, and blue, ignorance. So in this way, and then you have combinations thereof. Lots of combinations. But it's quite obvious that red incites passion. That's not very difficult to figure out. So this saffron it's supposed to be, of course this is from a tin, an imitation of the real thing. What can I do? Because saffron is too expensive if you have to start using real saffron. But the color is supposed to be saffron, which is more, it's as much softer actually, and more yellowish, I guess. And for the rest, that it's orange, oh well, I'm from Holland, you know. So, so that's the other side of things. But, everything has different qualities. And the whole idea behind it is you put good vibrations into the consciousness, good influence in the consciousness. So you wear colors that bring out a peaceful state of mind rather than, you know, if you go into a discotheque and you see how the walls are painted, it's not sort of a peaceful room, you know, it's sort of like designed for something else, right? For passion. Whereas if you have a nice room for meditation, you could imagine doing that in softer colors of white and yellow, and you would be become more peaceful. So like this, we use colors to influence the consciousness and make it peaceful.
Where did you have a question?
I was just wondering, Maharaj, if you could explain a bit. I mean, you know, there's so many different mantras and sacred songs and prayers and hymns. And I mean, why this Maha Mantra? Why is it considered the best or the most powerful? Or why do we chant it above all other types of mantras?
Jeez. Well, there are so many mantras. mantras. And again, mantra means mind, and tra means what sets the mind free. So mantras are meant to uplift the consciousness. And mantras also describe certain qualities. Like, for example, if you take Om as a mantra, Om is, in terms of its qualities, it is that which includes everything. So if you chant Om, you go to the root of all existence, that which is behind everything, that which is the foundation of everything. Underneath all the varieties of trees and sky and landscape, there is one spiritual energy named Om. So in this way, different mantras have their meanings also, and describe a particular aspect. Mantras are of a spiritual nature, and Om describes the all-pervading aspect of the spiritual nature, but the Maha Mantra describes something else. The Maha Mantra describes the all-attractive nature of the Lord. See, attraction is a big thing. I don't know if you ever read that book, The Secret, or saw the movie. I did. The movie, actually. No patience for the book, to tell you the truth. But, you know, it starts like these people are sort of underground in a cellar in his boots running somewhere, and it sounds like they're being persecuted and they're hiding. And there's a secret which has been kept through the ages. And what is that secret? And they're just about to tell us, and then they go to the next scene, and they're still not saying what it is, and then somewhere. So you keep on watching until they finally tell you what's the secret. Right? And then what comes out? The secret is the law of attraction. Attraction. Yeah, we all operate by attraction. For some reason, we do things because we're attracted. And when we're not attracted, can't do this anymore. Gotta get out of here. It's as simple as that. How long can you do something you're totally not attracted to? Therefore, the word duty has some sort of connotation of like heavy duty. Duty. It's more attraction. Now you're talking. So, just as we had in Om, the underlying spiritual energy of everything, in the Maha Mantra, in the name of Krishna, we have that which is all attractive, the ultimate, that one can say. So whatever that is, just like flower, attractive, smell. Hachi, not so attractive anymore. It was, but now it changed. So this is not all attractive. It also has an unattractive feature. Like me, myself, I have a sensitive nose, and then in some places in the world, you know, like, for example, in Cape Town, on the airport in Cape Town, South Africa, they have this wall, which is a big poster of hairy African flowers. And it's beautiful, but as soon as I see it, I start sneezing. What to speak when I actually come out. So many things are attractive, but they're not all attractive. And that is why we become restless. We look here, we look there, everywhere. Try this for a while, and then we change. Try something else, because it's not all attractive. But that is how Krishna is all attractive. Of course, it takes some time to figure that out, because we become conditioned. If you grew up with Kellogg's cornflakes, then you know that's all attractive. Then it's just you gotta have your cornflakes. But if you think about it, when you read that the box is more nutritious than what's inside, then after a while you think, like, well, maybe I should move on to something else. And gradually it loses its attraction, although sometimes you just fall down to some good old cornflakes. What to do? Just for the sake of the good old days. So, like this, well, it's very difficult to imagine the all-attractive, because we haven't found it. So when we first meet Krishna, then we also think, well, it can't be all-attractive. It's not possible. Then we think, we don't trust it. We sort of check it out and think, yes, nice, this mantra, it's okay. But all-attractive, I don't know. I mean, between you and me, I fall asleep. But still, it comes back again and again. And gradually it grows on you. And as it grows on you, you begin to realize, well, actually, there's more to it than I thought. And in this way, with the Maha Mantra, once you start chanting it, and when you go to your initial sort of doubt and reluctance and this and that, and you get into it, it actually gets really nice. And at one point you realize it is all attractive. It actually is. And that's the essence of it. And then we remain connected to the mantra. Because why is it the most important? Because attraction is what drives us, nothing else. We're just driven by attraction. I'm here in Australia because I was attracted to go here. Partially because I came here in the 80s. I'd lived in India for a long time, and I had been sick. I had a lot of malaria, which you can easily get in India, and I had turned 49 kilos, which for me is not exactly what I should be. Yeah. I mean, Maitreya would be finished at 69, I guess. 49, I went as far down as 49 kilos. And they said, go to Australia. And I came to Australia, and I saw that the sparrows were twice as fat as in India. So I knew I'd come to the right place. And sure enough, me too, after a little while, took on these more Australian features, which kind of, a bit of cream, a bit of cheese, and a few things fixed me right up. So ever since, I kept some attraction for Australia. So I come back to Australia, because I'm attracted. As for that matter, I'm totally not attracted to Alaska. Some people are, but not me, because it's just too freezing cold. So no way. It can be beautiful. I'll see it on YouTube. But I ain't going there. No way. Forget it, Even if you pay me, thank you. Let that one go. Right? So, different things attract us. So we're driven by attraction. And like, this, the thing about when you chant this Maha Mantra, after a while, it's addictive. It's addictive. It's just like we started the kirtan, and it came to a point where I sort of felt, are we going to stop already? Something in me wanted to keep on going, but all right, I stopped. Don't overdo it. But usually I do overdo it, and just keep on going, because I get captured by the mantra. So that's the unique feature of this mantra. It captures you. When you chant Om, you become deep, you start to think deep. But when you chant Krishna, it captures you. That's the amazing thing. And that is, that's why... let me understand the meaning. Krishna comes from the Sanskrit word akarsani, which means to attract. And then Hare means that if you serve Krishna. The point is, we are all servants. In serving lies the greatest happiness. In giving, there is greater happiness than in taking. It may take some time to realize that, but that is a fact. So, a human being is in its most ecstatic form when we are serving. You see that like between parents and children, that it's all about the child. The child eating the delicious things. His little grubby hand comes and takes this nice piece of cake right off your plate, right? Get out of here, you little monster. That's my cake. No. Oh, little darling. You want the cake? Eat my cake. But the kid, yum, yum. And the parents, they go, ah, want some more, right? They're very happy that the child is eating the cake, whereas if any kid would go for my cake, oh, you better watch out, kid. So, this mood of service is actually the highest you can experience. And in a way, service is a symptom of love, you see. You serve because of love. Service because you're paid is not real service, that's actually business. But service is voluntary. There's nothing you get in exchange for it, and you just... So we serve Krishna, the all-attractive. And then the result is Ram. And Ram means happiness. So we're serving the all-attractive, we get happiness. And that's the whole idea. So Krishna is the all-attractive, and then our relationship with it, and the result of a change of consciousness. And that's the Mahamantra. So this... So actually this Mahamantra, it brings satisfaction. And it was a long answer, sort of, to a loaded question. But it gave you some time to think of other questions, so if you have one. Otherwise, I'm going to sing again if you have no questions. Ah, he has all the questions.
This is a simple question, Maharaj. Can anyone be a Hare Krishna? I mean, what does it take? Where do you start? I mean...
No, it's not like that at all. It's not where you start. Everyone is a Hare Krishna. Only some people know it and some don't. That's what Prabhupada said. Recently, there was an Irish newspaper, and and there was an article in there, and it was an interesting article. It was, some journalist wrote it, and it was about... I forgot the title of it, but it was about enlightenment and how the whole world is somehow or other to a degree into that. How yoga has become mainstream, how everyone is meditating, And then he said, and not only like, your typical yoga freaks, he said, but established people, with suits and ties, they meditate as well. That everyone nowadays is into it. He said, you could say that the Hare Krishnas, right, or the Buddhists, right, for that matter, or, the typical monks, that they have, in a sense, failed to... convince the world to follow their ways. Because, there are still not too many walking around in the bed sheets and with the, with the bald heads, right? It's limited. No wonder. When I saw them for the first time in my town, this little grey van pulled in, a Bedford van, the back door flapped open, and all these little pink men came out with bald heads and everything. And lots of them. Too many, if you know what I mean. I was looking at this van and thinking, this is not logical. It's not possible that so many people can come out of one van. Something fishy going on. And I looked at them and I was wondering, are they from this planet? Or what? And they made a line and came in my direction. And I went into a shop, And I stared at them from behind the glass, and someone next to me said, "It's a dangerous sect." And I said, "They sure look dangerous." So, 3 months later, by the way, I saw them on TV, and then they explained their philosophy. No meat, fish, eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Then I knew they were dangerous. They're burnt. I said, forget it. I stay clear from these guys. Right? Anyway, what came in between, I won't tell you now. But it is a fact that... No, I think the tool is enough.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah, so the journalist was writing, he said that yes, the ways of the Hare Krishnas did not really catch on. He said, but then again, you know, the whole world now is taking their ideas. How many people are now vegetarian, right? No meat, no fish, no eggs. It's just becoming quite acceptable in the world. The world is changing. Yoga. You know, I went to some small village and they asked me to give a talk to pensioners, right? Old people. So I thought, let me start a little slow, and I go, well, karma, you know, action, reaction, and then go like, do you have anything else, you know? They go, karma, everybody knows about karma. So in this way, we have... gradually, a lot of this knowledge has filtered into the world. And that's the interesting part. So the journalist goes in his article and says, you know, are we all becoming Hare Krishnas? And he says, is there a secret that they know that we don't? And then he ends the article and says, are we all going to wind up one day in ropes and so on? And why not? What if the world would change? What if the world would change? And we just wouldn't have blue jeans anymore. Blue is anyway a color of ignorance. You know, what if we would just see the whole world in ropes? And everyone would be a vegetarian, and everyone would be, and animals would be happy. They would not be afraid. Just like the cows here, they're not afraid. I came walking down, and the cows, they walked with me along the because, you know, let's be frank, it must be pretty boring to be a cow. They stand there the whole day, chomp, 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 grass and trees, and Jesus, a bird, wow. Right? And when it's a human being, then they're getting all excited, you know. Whoa, human being. Maybe there's something to eat, maybe something different. Possibly they have a snack. Right? Yeah. So the cows, they followed us for a while as we were walking down. But I didn't have a snack, so they sort of... Yeah, it's a disappointment, this guy. But, yes. So, what if the whole world would become a Hare Krishna? Well, it would be nice. We'd be plenty to eat. Right? That's one thing for sure. No one would go hungry. Right? And, I mean, Prabhupada had a simple solution for the hunger in the world. He said, it's easy, you know. He said, we can feed the whole world, you know. It's just half the world feeds the other half. And then the next day, the one that was fed will feed the first half. Can be done. If you think about it. So, I don't know. I don't think it's a matter of becoming a Hare Krishna. I think it's a matter of becoming human. I think it's a matter of becoming kind. You know, we're coming from, I'm from just near Amsterdam, and then it's like where the world is fast, where the world is, where there's, it's about money, it's about production, it's about business, it's about no time. And quite hard, a hard world. You know, people say Amsterdam is such a nice place, but I didn't like it so much. You know, I thought people were hard, quite selfish actually. and not caring about others. So I'd like to see a world where everybody cares about everybody. That would be nice. So yeah, maybe one day it will happen. But not everyone agrees. I was on a plane from Canada to New York, and there's a man sitting next to me, and he goes, you know, I had a dream. I had a dream. I said, brother, tell me all about it. So he goes, and he says, I had a dream where all the world is united. I said, brother, that's a beautiful dream. That's beautiful. He says, yes, a world without religion. And I go, oh. well, what about me? I mean, like, I've been doing this for a long time. It's a bit hard to change now and kind of like, you know, set in my ways. I mean, what can I do? You know, it's sometimes stronger than me. It just comes out of my mind. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Even when I try not to, it comes out. Well, what do I do? So, I said, well, what do we do? What are you going to do with me? He said, like, too old to change. He looked at me for about 20 seconds with a serious look on his face. And then he said, yes. You are a problem. Oh, I was a problem. So I hope that our friend gets over it, you know? I mean, his dream was okay, but part two was a bit... he still has to work on that part, I think. Part one was quite good, but part two needs some adjustment. So, but once he's chanted the mantra a bit more often, he'll get it. He'll get it. I mean, let's be frank, the world has always been, mankind has always been into some sort of spirituality. Right? And in modern times, then, at one point, especially after the Second World War, people really got sort of fed up with the church. And meanwhile, you know, India wants to be like the West, so it's also not what it used to be. And China had communism, and Japan was busy making money. And like that, everyone had a reason to sort of give up spirituality. And we got this intense materialism. But even within that, a lot of people start to look for spirituality, and a lot of people look for pre-Christian spirituality, especially in Western people. They look for shamanism, they look for all these kind of things, because spirituality is natural. Why is everyone doing yoga? Because without spirituality, you know, our life is just as boring as the life of the cows. Yeah, just there, same old thing, you know. Yeah. It's a Saturday night and I ain't got nobody. Yeah. Same. And wake up Sunday morning next to a stranger. It's the same old thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did I get here? Who is that? Crazy. Crazy stuff. Without spirituality, what is there? What is there? You know. Then money is the honey. More questions. The sweet countries, the sounds of the countryside. soon as you leave the city and you're in the country and you see the trees, you get romantic, and then soon enough, a chainsaw everywhere in the world. The city is following us. They're right behind. So wouldn't it be nice if we can get rid of that eventually and get out of that kind of chainsaw world into a, yeah, something more natural? But it's not easy. So I was tired from the Amsterdam world. They smoke too much, amongst things. So I left that and I went to India looking for something deeper. And then I came back, and then a friend of mine had a farm, and I could live on his farm. So I took a train to the last station, got off the train, walked 15 kilometers, and then there were three houses. I was not quite sure which one it was. So I went to one of the houses, and I asked, and there was a guy living who had moved out of the city, and it turned out he was a dealer. So he's trying to sell me dope. That was the first thing. He said, nah, that's okay. Anyway, so found the house and stayed in the house. And then we were sitting there, me and my friend, in the winter, looking out of the window, chopping firewood to stay warm. It was cold. And we were thinking, yeah, you know, you talk to your friend, and your friend talks to you, and you talk a little more to your friend, and your friend talks a bit more to you, and you look out of the window, and you're out in the countryside, and there's birds chirping, and sort of winter, there's not much going on, and after a while you think, like, nobody to talk to. Yeah? Nobody to talk to. There's nothing going on here. And the mind is wandering back to the city. City life, where, you know, the action is, you know, something's going on, stimulating conversations, deep exchanges, you know, enlightened people, people that are searching. I need people, just grass and trees. But what if we bring them both together? The enlightenment in the country. Then where do you go? Let me think. Where could you go? New Govinda. That's a good idea. Here you got the best of both worlds. Yeah. Good life in the country. Real veggies. As I come in the Woofer's village and I see the organic juice advertised, it was attractive. Very cooling. Just pure. And I was like, wow. Pure. Anything pure, huh? Pure, purity, pure food, immediately attractive. The same thing when people are pure, also attractive. If someone doesn't have, you know, corruption, if you're dealing with someone who's not exploitive, that's attractive, huh? For a change, you know? Someone says, hi, looking for your money, how are you? Right? That's kind of not so attractive after a while. But someone who's pure, who's actually honest, who's actually kind, who's merciful, that's attractive. And those qualities are Krishna's qualities. And by chanting Hare Krishna, you get a bit of Krishna's qualities. You get a reason to be pure. If there's no spirituality, why in the world would I be honest? Give me a reason. Why? Yeah. If there's no spirituality, why would I be honest? Lying works well. It does. It saves a lot of trouble at times, you know. I mean, the truth sets you free, yeah. But the truth gets you in trouble as well, isn't it? So, you know, some convenient lies here and there, what's wrong with that? But when there's spirituality, then it's clear that it brings the consciousness down. We lose something. So in this way, how nice it is. What if the world was pure? Just like pure juice. It's attractive. What if they wouldn't put any chemicals on anything? Wouldn't it be great? What if, you know, what if they wouldn't hide the technology by which cars can drive on water? They can do it. Forget it, you know, the petrol mafia will never allow that. No way. Patents have gone underground. What about that? What if the world was pure? Well, those are my dreams. And now it's 1 o'clock. And I've waffled away, as I usually do. Yeah.
I have one question.
Hey, this is Michael from London.
Sometimes if somebody wants to practice spirituality, like a teenager, but they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend who is not so spiritual, how's that?
Ditch them. You don't know what you're getting yourself into, you know. It may look good, but it's going to be nothing but trouble further down the road. Ditch him now, before you get stuck. If it's only a boyfriend or a girlfriend, it's not too bad. But what if it's your wife or your husband? Oh my God, you know. I mean, you're married, right, to some guy who comes home, you know, sits in front of the TV all the time, and it's hot, and he takes off his shirt, and he wears something like Maitreya does, but Maitreya. And he has this huge fat belly, right? Sits there scratching the thing in front of the TV. And you're supposed to bring the coffee. Are you ready for 40 years of that? Good luck. Good on you, as they say in Australia. Good on you. Right? Oh God, a mundaner. And he's watching football, you know. He lives for that. That's all he's got. Football, football, football. You're sick and tired of it, hearing it. Right? Or, you know, I can do the same story about the lady also. The mundane girlfriend. Oh God. All I could say is, run, rabbit. Run.
What if they're too attached? What if they're too deep?
Well, you know, when there's love, sweet love, then they're gonna get married. Then they're gonna be like the rabbits and have many children. And it's okay. I'm not against having children. But it's not the all in all, having children. You know, so if the only thing in life is having children, then what makes us different from the rabbits? And then you dream, my children, you know, and then... But your children, right, they're not going to be what you want them to be. So it's not so easy. It's not the all in all. Now, without a spiritual goal in life, life is like, yeah, the life of a cow. And you're there in the field. Chomp, chomp, chomp. And it gets a bit boring at times. And you have these moments. You look out of the window and you sigh. When I was young, I used to dream. Not anymore. Those days are long gone. When I was a teenager, I used to dream of, I had some ideals, not anymore, you know. Yeah? But if you want some excitement, if you want an adventure in your life, and just live on the cutting edge, then I can recommend some spirituality. So, get a girlfriend, boyfriend, who's into spirituality, and together, go on a transcendental adventure.
Good advert. Yeah? It's a good advert.
Yeah.
Is it Michael? Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
Madreya can I can hook you up, not any time. Sounded like that, yeah. Sounded like, do you have one? Talk to me after the lecture.
How is spiritual life an adventure?
Hmm?
How is spirituality an adventure?
Because you experience newer and newer dimensions of yourself. It's about growth, see, as an individual, instead of getting stuck in the rut and just getting dull. The same old thing, you know, Monday to Friday from 9 to 5, and this is what I am. I studied for it, I got my degree, and now I got my job accordingly, and it's comfy. You know, I mean, it's not the all in all, but, you know, you do get 27 days off in the year, actually. I mean, no, it's not bad, actually. And, you know, I mean, we go on a nice holiday every year. We go to the same place. Yeah, we like it a lot. Camping in Italy, you know. We stay there every year. Lovely. Yeah, really. So nice. Yeah. And the kids like it, too. Lovely. Yeah, I just love it. So, spirituality is different. You know? You discover newer dimensions of yourself, actually, and of the world around you, and more meaning. So relationships don't become dry, not the same old thing, right? But they remain fresh and a challenge. There's always a new challenge in spirituality. Therefore, you can never say, now I'm there, I've made it. So, as my father used to say, son, life is a compromise. And I hated it. Yeah. I hated it. And I told him then, maybe for you, but not for me. Yeah. He's late, but if he was alive now, I would tell him the same thing. Maybe compromise for you, but not for me. I want to live a life on the cutting edge. And that's why I drink ginger tea.
Para.
That was a good effort.
Can you change mundane partner's mind?
Can we do what?
Can you change the mundane partner's heart?
Yeah. Yeah, it can change. It can change.
What's the question, sorry?
Well, can we change the mundane heart? Can we change the conditioning of the mind, our attachments, our habits? See, adventure is a good thing, especially when it's in the movies, right? Because that's safe adventure. An adventure movie is great. You go in the movie, in the jungle, and you know, fight with lions, tigers, alligators, and so on, and it's really exciting. I mean, in real life, you know, I mean, we wouldn't do such thing. So, adventure is such a thing that we don't mind adventure, but not too much adventure, you know, when it gets too adventurous. So in the same way, spiritual adventure, we go, yeah, spiritual adventure, that's okay, but not too much spiritual adventure. I mean, going to a yoga class once a week, no problem. I meditate also. I mean, TM, through TM, you can levitate. Do you know that? Did you know that? For a moment, you can actually hop. I know guys that used to do it. Meditate and they go up in the air and hop. Serious? Fair thinking. Would you like to hop a bit? Yeah? You can. Through meditation, it is really good. But at the same time, that sounds okay, but you know, Hare Krishna, doesn't that sound a bit like too much of a mouthful? You know what I mean? Doesn't it sound too much of a commitment? Doesn't it? They're all right, but doesn't it sound like something you look at, but you wouldn't really want to be? That's how I used to think. But little by little, I became it anyway. And then one day I said, well, I'm so close actually, I may as well. So it takes some time, you know. You cannot overnight change. But by spiritual influence, automatically you begin to see it. Like, I never thought about it, that there was anything wrong with eating meat. Never thought about it. You? I mean, not when I was younger, I never thought of it. Then one day, I mean, I started to think about it. Well, geez, maybe it's not nice, actually, thinking about it. But such thoughts, they only come by being with people who are actually have a reason not to eat meat, and so on. So when you're with spiritual people, then you begin to realize, actually, a life without spirituality is dry. So by the influence of such people, you change. You change.
What about mundane girlfriend or boyfriends?
Yeah.
Can you change their...
Can you change them? Mm. You can try to hypnotize them. You can try and cook delicious things for them and offer it to Krishna. That's what I did with my mundane girlfriend, actually.
Did it work?
It worked. I cooked a feast, and then in the end, I cooked this halva. You know? I had fresh cherries from the trees, and I had real hazelnuts that I cracked open, and I made the hazelnuts golden brown. Then I roasted the biological flour, right, until it was nicely roasted. And then I put in the golden syrup, you know, lots of golden syrup, and the butter, plenty of it. Right? And then these golden hazelnuts and the fresh red cherries, you know. And then, you know, mix it all together, right, at a high flame, then turn the flame low, put the lid on there, and never open it again until it was ready. Because if you open it once, it's not going to be the same. Okay, turned it off at the right moment. And then, you know, okay, then I served it out with the rest of the feast. And everyone said, wow, this is delicious. You have more cheese subject. You have more this, you have more that. And then it came to that halva. And then everyone said, is there more of that? And there was more of that. And my girlfriend didn't even say, is there more of that? Since we had a more intimate relationship, she wasn't polite about it. She just said, more. Put more. Then she said, more. 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 And finally she said, all right, I'll be a Hare Krishna. That's how it happened. Yeah, there you go. Of course, then the next thing was, we were in the south of France where this halva was going on, and then we were going to Holland to do something there, and we were in Holland and we're walking on the street, and she says, now that we're Hare Krishnas, is it all right if we're just boyfriend and girlfriend? Shouldn't we be married? And I go like, well, isn't that what they say? I said, well, they do, but you don't want to rush these things. Oh, no. No, but we should do it proper, you know? And then she said, here in the post office, we can apply for marriage. I go, in the post office? I never knew you could in the post office, but she did. She knew.
She did her research.
And she got me into the post office. And I went up to that window, and I signed some paper that I was applying for a marriage. And the guy behind the window said, congratulations. And I wasn't sure about it. Oh, God. yeah. And then we did have the marriage, and it was El Cheapo because we didn't have any money, and that, so we had two marriages at the same time, two couples at the same time. And then the man from the government, he was disgusting. He was going, tonight is the night, and soon you can kiss the bride. I think, oh God, I want to get out of here.